It is April 28th, 2019. You're listening to Fancy Ramen Podcast, episode 116. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And this episode, we cover a wide range of topics, starting with
me escaping rooms with a little bit of Labo and some Mortal Kombat with all the Ks.
We also go into talking more about my favorite gripe, The Long Dark, and how the introduction of player controlled or determined difficulty is probably my favorite innovation in modern gaming.
There are Mortal Kombat 11 spoilers. This on episode 116 of Fancy Ramen.
Escape the podcast.
Cookie, it's great to have you back this week. You took last week off because we were going to, we brain puked all over the place about Sekiro Shadows Die Twice.
Yep, that was the only reason I took off.
Really?
No.
I didn't think so.
Nah, I went to go visit some family over the long weekend while Lizzie was in Texas. I went to Georgia to go surprise my grandmother and family. It was a good trip.
That sounds very nice. I was like 2 hours late to my Easter event because we got into recording Sekiro real deeply, which, Neil, that's no fault on our part because I wasn't told that they were hosting at the exact same time I'd be recording the podcast as usual, roughly 51 weeks out of the year. And yet I still got shit for it.
Way to not be prepared, Scott. So yeah, I had a lovely weekend. It was, we escaped some rooms, built a computer, watched a bunch of anime, and played all the Vigia games.
Did you escape rooms in Georgia, or did you do it in Omaha after you got back from Easter, before Easter?
In Georgia. So we ended up doing two escape rooms. One had a roughly 50% escape success rate.
Mm-hmm.
I like hearing those probabilities.
I know, right? And we finished it with like almost 20 minutes to spare, not using any hints. So we sat around for 30 minutes while they cleared up one of the other escape rooms that had a 17% success rate, mm-hmm. escape rate. And we finished that with 1 second to spare using 4 out of 5 of our hints.
And if you can't escape, you're like stuck in the room forever, right? So that's really like a death rate.
Yeah, pretty much.
It part was, of the waiver that they have you sign. Or maybe if you're stuck in the escape room, then they end up releasing a virus that kills all of humanity.
I'm fine with this. Going the whole route of, oh God, I forgot what the name of that game's called. Doki Doki Panic.
Or Zero Time Dilemma. Is that the same thing?
What is Doki Doki Panic? Heartbeat Panic? Is that a real thing?
Doki Doki Panic is like Mario?
But it involves
viruses and
that wipe out humanity.
Yeah, a pandemic event.
Yeah, I was thinking Doki Doki Literature Club.
Oh, yes.
But the game I was actually thinking of was Danganronpa.
Yeah, okay.
And for whatever reason, Doki Doki Panic came into to view.
I mean,
Doki Doki Panic honestly sounds like the name of a game I would play, though.
It is the name of a game you would play. I was going to say, if you just Google images of Doki Doki Panic, art this.
Doki Doki Panic is, by the way, apparently Super Mario 2, just in Japan. Like, I'm looking at legitimately the thumbnail that you sent us. And I should have known, because I knew this before. I just forgot that was the name of it. But you know how Super Mario 2 is not Super Mario 2 in Japan. It was the Lost Levels.
Oh.
So Doki Doki Panic is the game that got changed to be Mario 2 in America.
Weird.
The origin of the Shy Guy, the best character in the Mario franchise.
He is pretty good.
Did you just assume Shy Guy's gender?
They. His name's Shy Guy.
And there are several Shy Guys. Who's to say that one Shy Guy out of the bunch? And, you know, guy is a term that can be used in both cases, right? Hey, guy. After having an awkward date with someone, with a female, and then, like, the next day they call you, you say, hey, guy, in return.
You're not my guy, bud.
Hey, bud. Hey, dude.
You're not my dude, friend. You're not my friend, guy. Anyway, no, we did some escape room stuff and got to watch plenty of anime. I got to see the most anime Batman that Batman could ever anime.
Are you talking about the Japanese one involving samurai, Bushido, and so forth?
Ninja Batman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It got super anime, like, all at once, and it was wonderful.
But we're not talking like big-eyed modern anime. We're talking more like Ninja Scroll, that sort of anime.
Ninja Scroll mixed with a little bit of Gundam.
Mm.
Yeah, there was giant fighting robots.
Fuck.
What era does it take place in? Like Sengoku. Time-wise?
Yeah, it's the Sengoku era. So basically, Grodd is building a machine, and he invites all the bad guys to unveil his machine with, and Batman and his group are about to raid Gorilla Grodd's dominion,
mm-hmm.
or his area, and then the machine goes off and sends them all back into the Sengoku era.
Oh, shit. So it's not like it's a timepiece, like just the characters existed in Japan. They get transported back then. Okay.
It's literally an isekai.
Does Batman end up meeting
transported
Nobunaga?
To another world with my Batman?
I want to say, God, it wasn't Nobunaga who was mentioned, but there was a feudal warlord that was actually mentioned that got bitch slapped by some bad guy. I forget who, though.
Mm.
But no, I got real anime, and I enjoyed it. While I was on my trip, I decided to buy into, do my weekly free trial of DC Unlimited. So DC's streaming service, so you can read all the I almost said manga, comic books, and watch some of their shows, because I wanted to start watching Doom Patrol,
mm-hmm.
and Young Justice Outsiders. My God, Doom Patrol is the best.
And this is all animated, right?
Doom Patrol is live action.
Okay.
It follows Last of Woman, Mr. Negative. I don't remember what Cliff is called. He's like a robot dude. Mm. And for whatever reason, Cyborg. Because he's hanging out with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just follows them on their wacky adventures before Cyborg goes off and joins the Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up watching the Titans live-action TV show as well. And they actually had an episode with featuring the Doom Patrol. And apparently Beast Boy was hanging out with the Titans, which makes sense as well, because canonically Beast Boy does know all of the people in the Doom Patrol. But he never actually hangs out with them, because he used to hang out with them, apparently. But either way, it was a good wild ruckus of live-action comic book hero-y.
So is this DC Access stream package thing basically like the WWE membership, where it's just like you have access to a shit ton of content that's actually being made presently, but you would never know about unless you had membership to the service?
Yes. There's a WWE package.
I know. This is really what like hooked me. I'm like, so what's going on in the WWE that I don't know about? Exactly. I mean, besides everything, because I'm not like in touch with that. But do they have a lot of production that's going on behind closed doors?
I'm not a member, so I can't say.
Or paywalls, I guess, behind closed paywalls.
I mean, if it's any indication, like they used to release like a weekly, or maybe even more often than that, a weekly. No, it might have been a monthly magazine for WWF. They probably still do, like. And with the invent of the internet and streaming services and so forth, like I think it was more or less a foregone conclusion that they'd end up, you know, having something like that available. I think they might even have a TV station.
Oh, the WW Network.
And so maybe that's what I'm talking about more so than like maybe the streaming service is like a secondary thing on top of that. Yeah.
So the network allows you to stream. The WWE Network allows you to stream Raw, SmackDown Live, 205 Live. I don't know what that is. Okay, apparently they're including women in Next. There's Next UK. What?
You mean
Miz and Mrs.? What is this? Worlds Collide?
It is male masculine soap opera. That's what it is.
Oh my gosh.
With crossovers every week. It's like if Days of Our Lives, and I wish I knew another soap opera because I could complete this joke, but...
Oh, my
General
Children.
Hospital. Yeah.
All My Children was much better than General Hospital. Get on my level, scrub.
I'm just naming what I know.
I watched an episode of Grey's Anatomy, and I begged to question... No, that's a terrible way to put it. I was not sure what the difference was between Grey's Anatomy and any other soap opera, with the exception of like maybe acting quality and definitely cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing called Swerved on here. There are a lot of fucking shows that have to do with wrestling.
Next week, Cookie will be discussing his venture into WWE Entertainment.
Yeah, should we all go on special assignment and pick a really like niche platform to see what service they have?
The only reason I knew about this, or like the only reason WWE is on my mind, is because like they're starting to reintegrate Hulk Hogan.
Okay. I thought it was because it popped up on your NRA TV subscription. So.
Yes, of course. No, but I just couldn't believe that Hulk Hogan was being reintroduced back into the world.
He's very old now, isn't he?
Apparently Benoit is still a no-go, but Hulk Hogan being a racist piece of shit apparently is still perfectly fine.
Not a problem, brother. Let's see.
He keeps saying brother. He must be down.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, because I honestly don't know who keeps up with, like, old famous wrestling figures aside from myself, but Hulk Hogan has been, there is a video of Hulk leaked out, like, a few years ago, which was graphic in nature, and then on top of it, had him
judiciously
throwing,
using
a lot of racial slurs to the point where you don't think it's just like a slip of the tongue, sort of, not his real feelings.
Like, define graphic in nature.
It was a porn video, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. I don't know. I guess you say graphic in nature, and I just wanted to make sure it was not a porn video.
It was,
now that you're saying that it was,
it's actually the full
sense.
Version of the Pain Olympics. He was actually part of it, and that was that. No.
Gross. Okay, anyway, what were we talking about?
Escape rooms and Japanese Batman.
Oh yeah.
And Hulk Hogan, all central parts of Cookie's Cookie's life.
Pretty much. But nah, it was a good, nice extended weekend of camaraderie. Built a computer, played some more PlayStation VR, got the Labo VR.
Wait. Did you buy another PlayStation VR?
No, I did not buy another PlayStation VR. When I was in Georgia, I got to play my father's PlayStation VR. Played some Ace Combat.
How was that?
Oh, Ace Combat, it's really, really pretty. I will say I was only able to fly one mission because I had it on like a harder difficulty. So I was doing a lot of like shit. I was barrel rolling, loop to looping. I stalled out my vehicle, stalled out my plane 2 times on purpose to not get hit by some missiles. So yeah, there was a lot of inversions and things.
So was there like a pail in front of you that you could just immediately pick up if need be?
Nah, I figured I'd be fine. I was okay. I just couldn't play any more VR that for the rest of the day, and I'm okay with that.
But like, so you did feel disoriented and maybe a little motion sickness afterwards?
Very much so. Yes. Okay. Yes, that was that was a given. I will say, comparing the PlayStation VR to Nintendo's VR, Nintendo did a pretty good job. I ended up getting the Labo VR kit. I do want to... I just built the goggles. I got the goggles and blaster set. I just built the goggles and got to play it just for like a little bit before my trip, and I've been too busy to play it since. But played a little bit and was like, okay, this is cool. But the real thing I want to try out is the Mario Odyssey and the Zelda Breath of the Wild. But the Labo as a VR headset works. It's downscaled in both resolution and frame rate, unfortunately. So I was feeling a little bit motion sicky when playing with the when playing one of the Labo VR games. But it looks good. And it looks much better than one would think it should look, considering what you're running it on.
Yeah, splitting a 720 screen to two eyes seems even less ideal than like the Sony PlayStation, the PlayStation VR.
Seems even less ideal than, you know, my phone and putting it into a VR headset.
Yeah, I mean, because most phones at this point are what? Like, they're better than 1080, but they're worse than 4K. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're somewhere in that, what is it? There's like a 280 range.
Yeah, they're like 2K officially. Unofficially. Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of like the non-gaming related things that I did all week, where watch some live action comic book shows and visited Georgia and escaped some rooms. If you want to hear more about it, subscribe to our Patreon.
And Fancy Ramen TV, our new subscription service for all of your WWE needs.
our commentary.
It's an exciting partnership.
All the Fancy Ramen TV streaming service is our live reactions to WWE.
Oh my God!
You have to subscribe to both to get the full experience. Yeah.
So the one thing that this Nintendo Labo VR has me curious about is, you guys have heard, are they rumors or are they somewhat confirmed that there will, I know it's confirmed that there will be new Nintendo Switch models coming out in the future, but I think it's rumored that there will be essentially one that is a like 2DS style downgrade from the original Switch hardware that makes it cheaper and removes some features, most likely like the HD rumble and whatnot. Maybe the gyroscope comes out as well. I don't know.
Supposedly you might not even be able to remove the Joy-Cons either.
Okay. Yeah, so
they have reconfirmed that. Before I went to Georgia, they were like, I read somewhere that the Nintendo's president was like, nah, we're not doing anything new for Switch anytime soon.
Okay. There's some speculation that I've encountered, and I've also seen that they may have a souped-up version of the Nintendo Switch, and that could be so the performance is closer to what they want for their VR quality, because the VR quality is not great from what I'm reading, and it sounds like from your experience it leaves a little bit to be lacking.
Which isn't surprising.
Yeah, I mean, if you blow it up, if you dock it on a big enough TV, you can see where it's a little more graphically limited than the PlayStation 4 or the Xbox One.
I mean, and maybe we can reserve some of that until Cookie's able to play Mario and Zelda on it to see exactly what limitations are actually going to happen in like full featured games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, yeah. Zelda will be the only full featured game. Mario is bite sized levels built in VR.
Yeah, they have little VR levels.
So where Zelda, they're like full on everything you do in Zelda Breath of the Wild, you do with Mario. I mean, do in VR.
Yeah.
Is there actually a strap?
No.
Nope, you hold it up, which is also like not a great idea.
So that you hold the entire thing up and then you play at the same time?
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. it's a return to the original Nintendo VR experience, the Virtual Boy, which, as we all know, is a resounding success, and therefore copying it is the best move from a business stance.
The Virtual Boy was not a success, and the thing that held the Virtual Boy back was the stand that it came with. So they're doing it without the stand, so it will be a success.
Okay, it was this. It was the stand that was obviously the problem.
This just seems so strange because I almost feel like it would have been maybe more advantageous to release a kind of, like, dare I say it, crappy version of VR with Labo, as opposed to, like, as a part of Labo, because, like, Labo was a bunch of different things together. If you threw VR mm-hmm. into it as well, that increases the appeal of Labo as a whole, as opposed to, like, waiting, what has it been, 6 months before yeah. releasing it?
And doesn't it also give you cover that if the VR sucks, it's like, well, yeah, but we also built a house and a piano and a fishing rod, and so it's just another, like, element in this kit. And therefore, you can hide it with all those other elements
right.
from scrutiny to some degree. You can say, oh, well, this isn't great, but this is. The like handlebar motorcycle build isn't fun, but the piano is awesome. Like, that if you have sense. Multiple components being judged at once, you can kind of soften the blow of things that suck. And I found expanding on that rumor about Nintendo potentially releasing a souped up and a downgraded version of the Switch. It looks like the Wall Street Journal is the
culprit,
is the publisher of those rumors. And then they also, I went to Kotaku, and it looks like Kotaku referencing Wall Street Journal, referencing whatever rumored source that they've been talking to, which makes this like a tertiary rumor at this point, has quotes about, the first will have enhanced features targeted at avid video gamers, although it won't be as powerful as Sony Corp's PlayStation 4 Pro or Microsoft Corporation's Xbox One X, which makes sense. Otherwise, the Switch would have to be close to the size of either of those big gaming boxes.
Why does that thing mention the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X? Why don't they just say PS, why aren't they trying to compare it to the PS4, the base model of the current generation hardware, instead of going?
I think they should, but it seems like it's maybe the mistake of trying to account for the fact that the One X and the PS4 Pro are like half steps towards next gen consoles, and this Nintendo Switch 2.0, let's call it, which is the upgraded version, is also technically a half step towards a new console.
Yeah, but if it's in the running, not for previous, but since this is previous generation power, I just don't like the fact that they tried to compare it to like the strongest hardware when the Switch
came
out.
The base hardware would be better to compare to.
Yeah, because when the Switch came out, people were comparing it to the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 in power scale, because they're like, it's not trying to compete with the most powerful thing.
Right.
So give us something to compare it to, rather than it's not going to be as powerful as, you know, that $1,000 piece of equipment over there. It's like, well, duh.
Yeah, but it could be. Yeah. Cookie, this is why, once again, you are my legal representation and now have also been hired on as my PR team for any advertising that I may choose to include in our collective venture of Fancy Ramen TV.
I already got your logo made up. It's literally you with like Cyborg's faceplate because you're a robot driving Truck Coon. And instead of like a screech behind Truck Coon, it's Scotsa Coon.
Okay, I love it. I'm completely sold. But yeah, I agree with your point 100%. Is it a great move to compare with the hardware that you know they obviously can't miniaturize to switch size? Or is it a better idea to just aim for the models that it's going to be probably closest to in quality?
Yeah, it's like, hey, let's compare it to, it should be like this so people know what they're getting, not a, it's never going to be like this. Because that's just a dumb comparison to make, just from the science of it.
Yeah, we've talked about, I don't know how many times, how Nintendo occupies a unique position in the comparison game on hardware and games, just because PlayStation and Xbox seem so much more similar in the content, both games-wise and hardware that they produce, that it makes comparison much more easy. While Nintendo occupies this third space where, besides third-party titles, they really tackle different gaming experiences.
Yeah.
Far more, you know, incest on Nintendo consoles.
You're damn right there. I think the only big overlap is indie games, but indie games require less power, or, you know, they require less processing power, and therefore the hardware matters a lot less. It's more about the availability of indie games and how well they, how compatible they are with that console's and, like, control system or display or like infrastructure on the, I guess, opening screens.
And Nintendo has an interesting approach too, with essentially Nintendo or Switch exclusive nindies as well. Whereas the majority of indie games, the majority, I should say, not all, on Xbox and PlayStation are ones also available from whether it's
PC.
Yeah, Steam or itch.io or whatever. I think while we're talking about other newsworthy things, we can clear a little bit of news, which we normally don't talk about, but I think this one's something that I believe a few of us might be interested in.
Does it end with an S?
It ends with an R and an S. So despite the rumors that had been circulating, as well as supposed leaks regarding Persona 5R and Persona 5S, we had more details in their reveals on the 24th and 25th after the 2 days of PSound 2019, the Persona live concert series, streamed on Nico Nico, as well as taking place at the I don't remember the arena in Tokyo, I believe. Persona 5 the Royal, we knew that much before, but now we know that there, as of now, we are pretty sure there's no female main character, that the red-headed ponytailed girl is actually another confidant and phantom thief, and that the game is going to be expanded from the current two playable semesters to three semesters, which, for, you know, avoiding spoilers here, that's a pretty major implication on the ending actually possibly being rewritten, which that's curious. I'll just leave that for that. And then Persona 5S was revealed to be Persona 5 Scramble Phantom Strikers, which is not a Switch version of Persona 5, but instead a Dynasty Warriors game, literally made by Koei Tecmo.
I was hoping it was going to be a soccer game.
I know, right?
Yeah, Phantom Strikers. Nintendo. I thought that too, yeah. I mean, I didn't actually think it was going to be a soccer game, but when I heard Phantom Strikers, I'm like, what, is this a soccer game? What is this?
It'd be great. Mario had his strikers. Now the Phantoms have their strikers.
Yeah, Mega Man got a soccer game. Wow, nice. Super Nintendo.
Look, if it's good enough for Mega Man, it should be good enough for Atlus.
I'm sure it's going to be fine. I'm sure it's going to be good. It seems like all of the third party or like all the licensed games that Koei Tecmo makes under the, you know, Dynasty Warriors or Warriors format, Musou format, another in the Japanese name, tend to actually be better than the actual Dynasty Warriors series. But it still seems kind of out of character for the fact that Persona 5 is about a game which, it, not so much in the mechanical standpoint, but it's about, you know, being stealthy thieves, breaking in, breaking out, trying
and
to
fighting
do a clean
hordes
job.
Of enemies the whole time you're sneaking.
Yeah, it seems weird. I'm honestly kind of bummed that there's not a female PC.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I would have to agree. It's too bad, but. Also, I guess if they're going to be reworking the ending anyway, it's a shame that they couldn't just, I don't know. I guess they'd have to redo all the animation with a female protagonist, which is probably expensive and a lot of time on top of
But you know, all the Persona fans would buy it.
Well,
yeah, and, I mean, I would have bought it.
From the preview, it looks like they have brand new animations for everyone, so... When I say animations, I mean like the animated cutscenes, brand new mm-hmm. cutscenes featuring a bunch of like all sorts
new
of different characters.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. The world looks a lot more populated.
At least that one area. Yeah. Kichi, I don't recall what they called it now. My expertise of Tokyo is from Persona 5. So if it wasn't in the base game, I'm not going to know it now. That and Shibuya Scramble. I don't know. You guys want to talk about video games, or is there any other news?
Kichijoji is where he was at.
Kichijoji.
Yeah, I got nothing for news. I forget. Oh, I also saw Avengers, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not be dickish and talk about spoilers. Because, well, no. I mean, I don't give a shit, but let's say someone's listening to our podcast and hasn't seen the movie. And people are taking it very seriously.
Oh, God, yes, you should. It's the end. So all I can say is, yeah, it was great. And I can't wait to see it again.
You're going to watch it twice?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Lizzie didn't go yesterday with me to go see it. She didn't want to wake up, which I was fine with. She says she wants to see it when everything calms down.
Gotcha.
After she's been spoiled by whoever spoils it for her. It seems so crazy how like people want to troll and spoil this movie for people. Like going from people yelling it or all capsing it in video games, online games like League of Legends.
I haven't bumped into a spoiler yet, surprisingly.
I was gonna say, you can't really spoil a lot because...
We already knew Ant-Man was going to do that thing.
It's very canonical to the comic books.
Is it?
Ish. More or less.
I mean, it's like people that were surprised about the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones, despite it being in a book that was 10 years old by that point.
Yeah, but no one's going to... Yeah, I guess you're telling people to read.
Yeah, point, the number of watchers versus readers, I think specifically in Game of Thrones, is a very like large gap.
I would almost say that's the same thing with Marvel, though.
Yeah, but Marvel's a lot easier to digest because it's not a thick ass book.
Because it's
literally
a picture
pictures.
Book. It's a yes. shit ton of picture books put together. No hate towards manga and comics, by the way. Graphic novels. I'm just, you know, being a shit right now.
No, and I completely agree. It's a shit ton of picture books just put together.
So this is where like our opinions differ, because I personally find comics to be like a much harder thing to get into. American comics and manga, for that matter, if there were not... Well, manga, not so much, because there's way more places you can just fucking read them online, and those resources don't necessarily exist for American graphic novels.
No, that makes sense, because, you know... You got to actually go to a store and buy a book for a comic.
Whereas, like, so if I wanted to go and, like, indulge in Game of Thrones, in A Song of Ice and Fire, rather, I'm going out and buying 5 books, maybe 6 or 7 with some of the other stuff, right? Now, with...
But those are thick-ass books.
If I wanted to go and indulge in the Avengers source material, that would likely mean I need to go and buy... And maybe not Avengers specifically. Excuse me. But, like, some sort of big event in Marvel or DC. I'm not just buying, like, the Infinity Wars books. I'm also buying some of the main characters and major characters, individual issues too, because a lot of the times they have events that happen in those books that are referenced back to in the main event series.
No, I could see that. But you can also get by with buying just the Civil War books, because that'd be like a good starting off point for
that's
you.
True. But, I mean, even then, so Civil War is not even part of the actual event that's happening. It's like...
Correct.
Whereas the movies at least offer, like, a concise version of, you know, here, you need to watch these 7 movies to be prepared for Avengers Endgame. Whereas in the graphic novel or comic version of that, it's like you have to read these select chapters or select... issues of this character, of this character, of this character. You need to read this event series, and then you're ready for this event series.
Yep. Or you can just, you know, dive in. A lot of comic book nerds actually just say, hey, if you want to start reading comics, don't even worry about like understanding what happened in the past. Just start where it's at and kind of pick up context clues, because they're not going to like hit you over the head with, oh yeah, don't you remember that? And not like give any context to it. They'll have like a flashback panel for it.
Don't you remember page 35 of issue 4 of Spider-Man?
But not that Spider-Man, Spider-Man Unlimited, but not the Spider-Man Unlimited you're thinking about. I'm thinking Spider-Man Unlimited when he was married to Mary Jane, and Mary Jane actually had a kid, and all 3 of them were actually crime fighting together.
And then the other character in the panel's like, yeah, I remember it. It's like, yeah, that place you went and got that milkshake was pretty good.
Pretty much. But no, I usually say, yeah, if you want to get into comic books, just, you know, just start on the current, like, start wherever you want, start current thing, and then just like catch up. If it's something you're interested in, then sure, you can go back and start rereading stuff, but you know, it's what else. Oh, but what were we talking about? Oh yeah, Endgame. It was great. It was great.
It was 3 hours long.
It was 3 hours long, and my God, like, so the one thing I can say is that there is no post-credit scene.
Because it's done, right?
Yeah, because it's done. And like the way they ended the movie really makes you want to sit through the entire credits.
Just like taking in what just happened?
Pretty much. At one point, you could hear multiple people sniffling. I was teary-eyed in this fucking movie. This movie made me cry. It's so good.
Kind of like the Nier effect.
The Nier effect?
When you play Nier Automata... They roll the credits so many times, but every single time they're like adding one extra thing to the story and the conclusion of that storyline that, I don't know, you sit through them. And the music's so good.
Yeah, like, I just found myself sitting through the credits because I was like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
In some of the endings.
There are some... When you accidentally eat a fish and die, that ending I rolled through the credits.
Well, I think the credits for those endings actually roll by extremely fast.
They zoom through, yeah, yep.
So,
they skip through it because they know you don't want to look at the credits because you just fucked up the timeline.
Eat a fish and die? See, you guys say interesting things like that, and that makes me want to play this game.
It's
but
so good.
You also say that I have to beat it more than once, and you guys know how I struggle with that.
It doesn't. But it's not actually the same thing.
It gets shorter every. Yeah. Yeah. And it's also not. It's not Dark Souls where you're beating it and then New Game Plus and then New Game Plus Plus. It's like each time you beat the game, that actually changes what's happening the next time you play the game. You're not actually starting from the same starting point necessarily.
And the reason,
but like, so how long's the first playthrough?
As long as you want it, technically, because a lot of the content
can take a really long time. Yeah. But
how short can I make it without knowing how to mid-max?
Maybe like 5 hours.
5 hours.
Do you think that's too short?
That's insane. No, maybe it's not. I guess if you're not, if you're just like, if you're sticking strictly to like story plot and you haven't done a single side quest.
And it's on easy. Game, because I think.
Yeah, and the game's on easy because otherwise it'll just kick the shit out of you. Because it has that same scaling barrier that games like The Witcher have, where it's like, sure, you can start this story quest, but you're 20 levels under, so you're going to get dunked on in one shot. 10 hours. I'd double that, Neil.
Maybe. So, yeah, so I just won't be able to play this game because you want me to beat it multiple times, but. And it sounds really interesting, but I can barely get through anything. I beat two video games in the past 2 weeks.
If you want to commit, I think, under 2 hours worth of time, so roughly one half of an Avengers movie, there's a YouTuber called, I think it's Adam Myard, and he runs a channel called Architect of Games, and he has the best breakdown of Nier Automata I've personally seen. It's very, very good, and I don't know if not playing the game poses a barrier to enjoying it, but I think it still makes the game very interesting.
I think there are some really big things that you miss out on by not playing.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of which...
If we could go... Oh, go ahead.
One of which is like more mechanical, and the other one's like the more emotional standpoint of devoting a bunch of time into a character gives you a sense of attachment, regardless of your opinion of like the character's attitude and so forth. Like, you become attached mm-hmm. to characters the more time you spend with them.
But that's very true.
It sounds like we're talking about video games at this point, so...
We're there.
About video games.
I beat a game.
What'd you beat?
Did I tell you guys I beat It'll Do 2 yet?
No, you said you were playing It'll Do 2, but you didn't say you beat it. You were at the flooded basement / water level.
I was at the water temple and It'll Do 2. Yep, I have beaten It'll Do 2. It was a short, fun adventure. I still had some like puzzles and things that I can do, but I was pretty happy with, you know, collecting all the pieces, finding out what was going on in the world, and rowing off to my next adventure.
Do you leave by one of the borders of the island, or do you just go back to the pond?
You go back to the pond.
In the center, really?
Yeah, did I send you guys a screenshot of the pond? It's not a big pond.
No, you explained it. It was like 8 feet by 8 feet or something.
Pretty much.
Just like, big enough where you couldn't see land if you were in the center.
If you look straight down into the water.
Pretty much. It was just big enough for the raft to fit inside of the pond. That's how big the pond was. So yeah, so you go back to the pond, rebuild your ship, find out about the mysteries of the island that is built for adventurers, but the main boss doesn't like adventurers because... He has to reset the island every time an adventurer comes through. This is a fun time. It's like, you're just like, man, this island's so great for adventurers. He's like, but I hate adventurers. Got to pay staff to be bosses. So yeah, the bosses were like staff on the island to defeat or be defeated by adventurers. They're like puzzles and things. It was a nice fun time. And then, so you guys mentioned something about the power of the Switch versus current consoles.
Mm-hmm.
I did not make a mistake. I did not buy Mortal Kombat X on the Mortal Kombat 11 on the Switch.
that's a very good choice.
But I also beat that story, which I consider that still a feat because the Mortal Kombat story has gotten very crazy and balls to the walls.
Is it good, though? Did you enjoy the story?
Oh, my God, yes. So many things have changed. Can I go into spoilers?
Please do.
Are we opening up the gates to spoilers for Mortal Kombat 11?
Yeah, because fighting game stories are, you know, the bread and butter of fighting games.
I don't know, man. Have you been keeping up with the Mortal Kombat story? That kind of is the bread and butter of Mortal Kombat.
Only the 1990s film Mortal Kombat.
There you go. Raiden's no longer a god. He's just some dude now.
demigod? Oh, no.
No, no.
How?
Yeah, right? So the story of Mortal Kombat 11, because they were like, hey, there's going to be a bunch of time fuckery because there's going to be the young versions of the young versions of all the heroes and old versions of all the heroes. So there's a lady named Kronika. She's the god of time. She wants there to be balance. And Raiden keeps disrupting this balance because he's kind of a prick. So Mortal Kombat 10... So I'll start from the... Who makes Mortal Kombat now? NetherRealm? I'll just start from the NetherRealm... from the NetherRealm continuity. Because before NetherRealm, I forget who was making Mortal Kombat. They did everything up until Armageddon. And Armageddon was like, hey, everything's come to a head. Everyone's dead. Shao Kahn's about to kill Raiden. Raiden sends back his memories to a past Raiden at the end of Armageddon, thus starting nine. And that goes back to the very first Mortal Kombat game, the reboot with Mortal Kombat 9. Mortal Kombat 10, Liu Kang once again dies. He becomes a Revenant. He is now one of the ruler of the Nether Realm, not Outworld. He's the ruler of the Nether Realm. There's been a bunch of time passed. He hates Raiden. Raiden took over Shinnok's amulet and became evil, but he's still Earthrealm's protector. And so 11 starts. Raiden's like, all right, we need to destroy Liu Kang and all his forces. We need to attack preemptively rather than wait around for like a Mortal Kombat to start, because fuck that bullshit. Sonya ends up dying. Lots of things happen, and then this time goddess is like, okay, Raiden's fucked up my shit one too many times. I'm actually going to reboot the entire world, but this time without Raiden in it. So the Earthrealmers, so as she starts rebooting the world, evil Raiden goes away, because since he's immortal, he can't be in two different times at once, or one time in two different spaces. So good Raiden comes from the past to kind of like say, hey, what the fuck's going on? We were at the first Mortal Kombat tournament, or we were at the Mortal Kombat tournament with Liu Kang, Johnny Cage, and all those guys. And now we're in this time period. Holy shit, there's an old Jax, there's a young Jax. What's going on? Old Jax becomes a bad guy. Lots of crazy shit happens, but it kind of comes to a head when young Raiden takes Shinnok's amulet. It starts to go off the rails, and Liu Kang decides he wants to. Liu Kang's like, hey, you're bad, don't do that. And then they're about to start fighting, which is what happened in the past when Raiden kills Liu Kang. Raiden sees the pattern this time, though, and he's like, holy shit. So you do the fight. I beat Liu Kang and heard a specific tone that tells me that there's probably branching stories. But after I beat Liu Kang, Raiden's like, holy shit, we've done this before. And then they go into this like bombastic fucking cutscene of Liu Kang and Raiden going through like the same like three lines of dialogue and fighting, but in like a bunch of different fucking outfits, because the time goddess is like reset time so many fucking times. And Raiden's like, no, we need to change some things. And then she comes along and she's like, cool, yep, you can change some things, but you're not changing things without Liu Kang. And she takes Liu Kang away, and they fight, and they get Liu Kang back. And Raiden's like, okay, we really can't beat her. So he actually merges with Liu Kang. So Liu Kang then becomes the god of fire and lightning. You do a couple of fights with Liu Kang, god of fire and lightning. And then Raiden separates himself from Liu Kang, but since Liu Kang is now the god, Raiden's just a dude. They end up going like back in time during the fight, and they're at like the Big Bang. So now Liu Kang's the god of fire, lightning, and time. So it was a complete reboot by the end. And the reason I think that they're splitting things is because during the last fight, if you lose the first round, like before the first round starts, she takes you back to the main boss lady, takes you back to the Jurassic period. If you lose that fight, You hear the sound. She then takes you back to the time of the Big Bang. And then you have to fight her some more because you have to win two rounds. Now, if you lose against her during the time of the Big Bang, you hear that tone again, and she slits your throats, credit rolls, then it says, do you want to try again? And when you actually beat her, you don't hear that tone. So I'm thinking when you beat Liu Kang as Raiden, they're branching stories. But yeah, the story that I had that ended was Raiden's just some dude at the very beginning of time kind of teaching Liu Kang about God powers until he dies. And Liu Kang's supposed to craft the perfect timeline. And that's where the game ends.
This sounds like some stupid bullshit.
Super exciting. Oh my gosh. It had all the feels. There were like great moments of like Scorpion was a bad guy back in the day, but he's a good guy now in like the current timeline. So Scorpion ends up fighting Scorpion. And Scorpion's like, the good Scorpion convinces bad Scorpion to be good. And then good Scorpion dies. And then bad Scorpion has to go and like give the bad news to all the good guys. But none of the good guys believe him because he's bad Scorpion. You're like, oh my God. Oh, it's great. Great story.
So what you're telling me is that the story is like crafted to be as fan service-y as possible to all these different fans of characters.
Yeah, pretty much.
You like zombie Liu Kang? We got zombie Liu Kang. You like human Liu Kang? We got human Liu Kang. You want a whole new Liu Kang? Here's God Liu Kang. Good Scorpion? Bad Scorpion. Good
Sub-Zero.
Good Sub-Zero, thank you. Bad Sub-Zero. Good story? Bad story.
Well, actually, it's good Sub-Zero, bad Sub-Zero, undead
morally
Sub-Zero.
Neutral. Oh, okay.
Right, undead Sub-Zero. How could I forget?
Because Sub-Zero is Noob Saibot. So the original Sub-Zero, he dies and gets resurrected and becomes Noob Saibot by... I almost said Ra's al Ghul, but that's the wrong just universe.
Do you know Noob Saibot's origin of his name and creation?
Like the actual name of Noob Saibot? No, I can't say that I do.
Reverse it. It's Tobias Boone.
Oh, yeah. That does sound familiar. Yes, that does sound familiar. Either way, yeah. It's a great story. So I ended up beating that. And now I'm just kind of, I'm learning the ropes and getting my ass handed to me online.
Combat good?
It's Mortal Kombat combat, so it's okay. I'm more of a Marvel, God damn it. I'm more of a Street Fighter type of, Street Fighter combat type of person.
You can't say Marvel anymore.
I can. Marvel versus Capcom. That was the game I was thinking of. But either way, I'm more of a Capcom head than a Mortal Kombat type of combat person. But it's good. It's gave me a good reason to polish off the old fight stick.
Well, what have you been playing, Scott?
Let's see. Besides, actually, I don't know if I've touched Sekiro since we talked about it last on the dedicated pod. I've returned once again to... the Canadian wilderness in the long dark, and I can't break away from it completely.
That story mode improvement, huh?
No, I haven't touched it. When people ask me what I'm playing, I make sure to lead with the premise of this is my favorite sandbox survival game I've ever played, and it's also my least favorite story mode game I've ever played. Like, this game is it's the ultimate conundrum for me, but I think it's actually proven, it's defined maybe my favorite, and I don't know if this is necessarily a modern innovation, but what seems to be a more modern innovation in gaming, and that is it's allowed me to realize that my favorite thing that a developer can do for a game that I already like is implement like a custom difficulty where the player can control a large amount of like sliders or options in order to determine really a custom difficulty and get the experience that they want out of a game. I was trying to look up just the number of games that are really known for having these features outside of doing, you know, an easy, a normal, and a hard, but actually having specific discrete game elements that are built on sliders or like frequency ratios, or even just like toggling whether certain interactions occur or not. And the only game that I can think of that does it to the same level of detail that The Long Dark does now that I've built my, I think, ideal survival custom mode that has roughly like 50 options to select, which is really kind of phenomenal, is Dishonored 2. Dishonored 2 also has a way that you can... I think there's at least 20 options on that one on ways you can modify the Dishonored experience in order to better fit the type of gameplay that you want. So you could have like still relatively weak guards, but with much like better senses towards actually detecting you to force you to have a harder stealth gameplay experience, but the combat doesn't necessarily need to be more difficult. In the same way, the way that I like my difficulty existing in The Long Dark is primarily off of the environmental challenges and not playing on the harder difficulty modes like Stalker, which is like the second to last difficulty mode in the sandbox, where it just seems like there's 40 wolves spawned into a small area, and if you go more than 100 yards in any direction, there's like a pack of three waiting to like gnaw your face off in sequential order. And so by games having these options for players, especially I think it comes to the advantage of not only new players, but players who have quite a bit of experience, because now that I've looked at the time I've played The Long Dark, it's almost 120 hours of my time I've put in to this game's sandbox.
Damn.
The more I know about it, the more I kind of understand like what I want out of my custom experience and how to make it more enjoyable and more challenging in the way that I like. So for instance, in my game, I've turned down the wolf spawns, but I've made sure that they're still like a very viable threat. And so by giving myself like a 12 to 24 hour grace period where no predators spawn, so I can at least get started in the game, that saves me probably an hour of games that otherwise I go to find shelter or something, get eaten by a wolf defenseless because I've just started the game. Or instead of walking through an area and then being detected by one wolf in a like group of four that are in the area and being able to fight one off and then bloodied to the point where the others pick up on my scent and then sequentially walk up to me, attack me, leave me blacked out for the next wolf to walk up, attack me, and kill me. I have instead still a struggle with a wolf, and they can do a lot of damage to my character, and it can be hard for me to fight them off, and I don't just instantly recover after that. I have to really like tend my wounds and take precaution of any sort of encounter. I'm not having wolves line up to kill me because they're so concentrated in an area. And it's just such a nice feature. It's like you and Tiff have approached Sekiro, and this is, it's hard for me to compare a From Software game to this because I think From Software has very specific intention behind all of the design, and some games may not benefit from having player-controlled difficulty with a lot of options. Like, I don't think that Dark Souls or Bloodborne or even Sekiro would be good games to have this option, but it's a game that I've played recently, and so that's why I gravitated towards it as a quick example. You and Tiff have different play styles as far as the iframes versus the deflection approach to dealing with combat encounters. With a player with a customizable difficulty, maybe you can practice or enjoy more deflection heavy combat by increasing the amount of stamina that you have or decreasing the amount of stamina chip that mistiming a deflection or a block causes from an enemy attacking your guard. just thinking about all of the games and all of the different options that are available, the one thing that I'm very excited about seeing in games like Dishonored 2, The Long Dark, I know Thief also had very modifiable difficulty options. The version that came out, not the original Thief, but whatever the like modern reboot was 5-ish years ago. Like, these are all ways to not only make games more enjoyable and accessible for beginners, but for like expert players looking for a very specific experience. It doesn't seem like it takes the developers too much to be able to just let you in-game tweak some of the like options or the values that the game's programs are running off of to give you a different experience in difficulty and interaction with the like game's mechanics.
I like it.
I was gonna say it's kind of like having a debug mode.
Yeah, absolutely. It's,
oh, that would be a good way to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, especially for games, let's say the games I'm trying to think of that would really benefit from this. So Dishonored 2 is published by Bethesda, but it's developed by Arkane, if I remember correctly. If Bethesda did this, had a more customizable options for its difficulty for the Fallout games or the Elder Scrolls games, I think that could be the type of game that would very much benefit from having more malleable difficulty sliders. If, say, you were playing Elder Scrolls and you decided that, like, or let's say for Fallout, you could literally change a slider so bullets were much more valuable in the game. So all of a sudden, ammunition is much harder to find, and somehow you're in more of a post-apocalyptic world in which there's not just this, like, constant stash of like militarized ammo dumps and weapons everywhere, because that doesn't make a huge amount of sense. And so all of a sudden there's a greater need for melee weapons in Fallout because of the rarity in bullets, and it may make for a more realistic scenario. Or in Skyrim, if you want magic to be a rarer thing, it'd be very interesting if you could slide like the mana cost of spells or
that'd be cool.
Other features like that. Yeah, there's just so many cool things you can do. And I think specifically the game would decide what sliders would be the most impactful. The developers are going to have the best idea, of course, as to what the base experience they want their games to be at their, you know, easy, normal, hard difficulties. But as players become very informed of kind of the nuance on how these systems interact with their gameplay, I think gamers can really tailor a very interesting and customizable experience to their personal tastes off of a game without the game needing to do a lot of work besides provide the options to tweak these like values in-game. Versus somebody having to have a background in coding to try and mess with the actual like infrastructure, or like try and put in console commands on your computer version of Skyrim. So you have, I don't know, I'm trying to relate it to like back in the day when I used to play computer games and you could break out the tilde and type in a command for like God mode, or change the amount of money immediately in your pocket by just manipulating some basic variables that are part of like a developer or a debug mode, right? Giving players those options with your game in a way that's a little more safe and less likely to break it or be an extreme alteration or modification of the game could make some games, I think, appealing to gamers who otherwise don't like them in their base state or aren't super sold on it.
Yeah.
Once again, I need to preface that The Long Dark has the worst story mode that I've ever played in a game, and buying it for that reason is the biggest mistake anyone can make. But the survival mode has been a delight and has only improved as they've continued development of the story mode and carried over all of their improvements into the sandbox.
I like how you had to think about, oh yeah, I was giving The Long Dark praise. Let me take it down a few pegs.
It's like I need to have the duality of like, thank you, Hinterland Studios, fuck you, Hinterland Studios. Like,
I think we should spend a week at some point talking about game difficulty and the intentions of developers, because it's a really interesting topic when you have like several different schools of thought about how to develop games for how to develop games and what the difficulty of those games should be. Like From Software, we don't have to get too deep into it right now. It's just like, you know, you have From Software who have modifiers available in their games as well as like self restrictions if you really choose to do that. But like for the most part, don't have anything available immediately. Then you have games that have like 10 different difficulty settings when you think about Civilization.
And then
you have other games that like have different difficulty settings but have the audacity to say like, this is the canon. This is the canon difficulty. And I'm looking at you, Halo.
We have baby mode, also known as narrative mode, and we have you're a fucking badass because you chose insanity and we purposefully gave you less ammunition than you're supposed to have to kill these enemies, so you have to cheese everything.
I actually don't mind if people are just kind of poking fun at the, if they're being descriptive and like interesting or like tongue-in-cheek about the difficulty modes, like the way you depict the difficulty modes in Wolfenstein, where I think like the easiest difficulty mode is
he has a pacifier or something.
What's that?
He has a pacifier or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then he looks more rugged and manly with each one. Like, that's fine.
Their final mode, he's a skull. Like,
right.
The character's face is, it's Billy Blazkowicz or something? BJ Blazkowicz? Yeah. His face gets skinned off because that's the coolest and toughest kind of human. The one that's already dead.
The one that's a giant skull.
Yeah.
We think we have skulls inside of us, but what better way to illustrate that point than to just take the flesh and blood out and off? Well, what other games have you been playing, Scott?
That's it. I've played a lot of The Long Dark, as my hours of gameplay suggest. I'm just mapping out areas, and this is probably the most successful run I've had from the start to finish, and it's just because I really wanted to tweak... Kanye inspired me once again. I'm a fix wolves, and so I did. And I made the invite. I built this game type to be very punishing as the game continues. Essentially, you can even adjust, like, does the world get colder over time and does the weather get more severe? And I like maxed out all those sliders to make sure that like every day out in the elements is very hard on my character, and so it's still a very gritty survival experience, but I'm not getting cheesed by like four wolves spawning next to the camp that I'm in.
So is there a setting which determines the elasticity of the rubber banding with the wolves?
Of your wolves?
Yeah, there is, sort of. There's a detection range that you can set for wildlife. And so, like, the lowest detection range is a really bad one, where you can, like, walk up to rabbits with your bow and arrow, like, 10 feet away from them and just shoot them right in the face, and they don't run away at all. And then you have, like, on the farthest setting, it's like you have to sneak up to an animal, and then you still have quite a few paces between you, maybe 20, 25 feet. Or yards, I forget how they measure it exactly. Maybe it's meters. I have everything in metric in my game. Probably 20 meters away, which I understand is different from 20 feet. And they'll be spooked by the slightest movement or sound. And then you also have scent detection, which you can modify that too. So it's like animals can respond to you both visually and audibly, but if they can't see you, they can still potentially smell you if you have like burritos. Fresh meat or guts on you, and you'll have different levels of multiplying that like scent setting by how much you have on you. So if I like just freshly harvested a deer carcass, I can have up to the maximum like scent modifier is 3 scent marks. And so a wolf may not be able to see me, but it could still start approaching me because it can smell the scent on me. And so that wolf might howl and call friends even, so they can like surround me or track me down even if I'm hiding. Meanwhile, if I have no scent modifiers, the wolf might not be able to see me. And if it can't hear me, it also can't smell me, so I can sneak by it more effectively by just staying out of line of sight and not making a lot of noise.
Interesting. So
yeah. And the Aurora mechanics I've fucked around with a bit too. And real short and sweet, the
game's based off of Aurora Borealis?
Yeah, the game's based off of the whole reason that the world's going to shit is some sort of geomagnetic event. I think it's like some 2012 doomsday, like the polarities switch and every piece of like electronics is busted now and unable to be repaired or returned to an operational state. But when the Aurora Borealis shows up at night, electrical devices will start operating kind of sporadically. You can like turn on a radio and it will pick up like long wave transmissions, and you can hear like an NPR style like classical piano sonata over the radio for a little bit. And there's a flashlight whose batteries are, they recharge during the aurora, but you can only use it once the aurora isn't in the area anymore. Like once the aurora ceases, the batteries on the flashlight go dead. And so you can use the flashlight only during Aurora Borealis moments. And if you use the right click, it'll actually like shoot a high beam that's really bright that I think scares off wildlife. So like there's these really weird mechanics with the Aurora that allows you to just barely interact with electronics at while it's active. And so you can even read like notes on computer screens, and you'll hear like the computer, you can definitely hear like the hard drives grinding while the aurora is going on. And exploring indoors is easier because some lights will like flicker. And I think it's a really cool addition to the game. I've enjoyed it, but I haven't done too much exploring at night. I also read something about the wolves being more aggressive at night during the aurora as well, but I'm not 100% sure about that.
Have you been able to fight off a wolf with a torch yet?
No, I haven't. I had one attack me and I shot an arrow at it, and it just like, it was literally, I was face to face and I shot it by its ear. And so then we got into a real brawl and I had to hack at it with my hatchet. I have not killed a wolf yet, but I have also not died to a wolf yet. So
nice. When Aurora Borealis is going on, does your kitchen also start on fire?
Well, no, because everything's wood stoves or coal-fired. It's wood burning.
I
did use a forge, though. I started to use the forging mechanics as well. There's three forges throughout the game, and you have to be able, like, to even use the forge, you have to get the furnace below it to 150 degrees Celsius or higher in order to use the forge, which means lots of wood fuel, and then you have to have coal, because I think the game caps the heat of a fire by wood sources at 80 degrees. So then you have to use at least like four or five pieces of coal. But then you can forge scrap metal into arrowheads or like improvised hatchets or knives.
Does the term steamed hams mean anything to you?
It absolutely does.
Okay.
That's good. It means shit to me.
You might just have to find that on your own now.
Yeah, okay. It's worth it. Look up the near steamed hams.
Oh, the near look steamed hams is good. The Danganronpa steamed hams is also really good.
Okay.
Lots of good steamed hams videos out there.
Neil, do you have anything to talk about?
Yeah, I have. I have things to talk about.
We saw your long list and we thought we'd just cut all that time out with our own content.
If you have comments, questions, or anything else, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com.
Or you can tell your friends to leave a like review on Fancy Ramen on the Apple Podcast Store.
Or you can just tell your friends about the podcast in general. I found it happens to have a 0.46 success rate with generating new listeners.
With new listener retention.
Yeah. No, our listener retention's not bad, I don't think. Look, guys, we trash talk ourselves on this podcast, but for all you know, we're doing phenomenally.
Right, what?
Have a good week, everyone.
Bye.
Scoop.